Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilek, and Sujit Mello, discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please see our website at azpodcast.com. Well, welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 99, being recorded on the 22nd of October, 2015. My name is Sujit DeMello, and on Skype with me, I have my esteemed colleague, Kale Teeter. Hey, Kale, how are you?
I'm good, and episode 99, because, and Evan's missing this time, so I know what it is. He's waiting for that special triple digit.
That's right. He's going to join us on the 100, I'm sure. Boy, yep. That, I never thought we'd see this day when we started this about 2 years ago. I'm glad we made it this far.
Yeah, definitely. And I was just, for our listeners, I was telling Sujit this week, you know, it's great, the feedback we've been getting, and we've been getting more about this. And it's great to hear from people saying, hey, I listen to your podcast regularly, so I appreciate all the listeners out there, like, tuning in and providing feedback. So keep the feedback coming on what you guys want to see. And, you know, hats off to Sujit. You guys don't know, but he does an amazing amount of work behind the scenes to make this possible. So thanks, Sujit.
Oh, thank you for that, Kale. I mean, I know, as I mentioned also offline, that you and Evan are the brains behind this whole Azure stuff. I just kind of, you know, pretend to know some of it sometimes. But really, it's been a great team effort, and hopefully we'll keep this going for a while. As a matter of fact, you mentioned that, you know, you've been in touch with a lot of people, like in presentations and whatnot that you've been doing recently. Do you want to say anything about your new role at Microsoft?
Oh, yeah. So we haven't talked about that on here. But so, you know, as before, I was a consultant with Microsoft. I worked in the app dev space and then, you know, in the Azure Center of Excellence team. So specializing in basically Azure development type opportunities at Microsoft. And then I ended up just recently taking a role with our DX group. And we've had some guys from DX actually on the podcast a few times. And it's a pretty big division inside Microsoft, but basically it stands for developer experience. And so I'm working mostly with ISVs and helping them implement Azure or integrate into the Azure services.
Great. And you did mention that you've met a few of them that have been are listeners of the podcast, and they reached out to you, giving you some feedback and things like that.
Yep, definitely. It's awesome. I said just keep it coming.
That's great. Well, so, you know, I think we probably mentioned it before, but we did have the AzureCon, which I think was last week. Great online virtual Azure conference. Some lovely keynotes, of course, by Scott Guthrie and others. And I definitely recommend all our listeners listen to the AzureCon. It's probably 3 or 4 hours worth of material there. You know, if you just want to get the highlights. But what we decided to do is at least see if we could pull out some nuggets of information from them and understand what's new in the Azure space. They made a lot of important announcements, and it'll be important to get our listeners caught up on that. But before we get there, Kale, you had some information on GPUs that you wanted to talk about.
Yeah, so that's something that's kind of close to my heart. It's been for a while, even before Microsoft. I have been kind of a closet game developer, graphics programmer kind of thing. And so, you know, one of the things that was announced at AzureCon, I was telling Sujit, that was kind of nice was the announcement of the N-Series ISVMs that we're going to be spinning up, which will basically have discrete GPUs available inside. Now, I think it's a little beyond that to think about what these machines are. It's not just one of our VMs with graphics cards in them. It's also a pretty beefy ISVM. I mean, these things range. There's going to be a range of them. We announced them. It's like the N series. There's six different flavors of them from the N1 up to the N21. And on the bottom end, we were basically two GPUs, and it's partnership with NVIDIA. So if you look at the AzureCon videos, there's one on GPU with Mark Stavely on it, and he's talking about this. And we basically have a partnership with NVIDIA, so we have M60 GPUs and K80s. And if you're not in this space or plugged into it, it might not mean a lot, these numbers, but these are pretty beefy GPUs coming out of the NVIDIA side, and you can get anywhere from one up to four of these from the M60s or the K80s. I think on the bigger end of the spectrum, I mean, the biggest machine we have will be like a 24-core, 256 gig of RAM and these kind of things. So it's a pretty big machine, and it's got multiple GPUs in it, and really designed to handle a couple different types of workloads. So like visualization, high-end visualization, so we can do basically remote processing on these GPUs so that you don't have to have the same on your machine you're viewing this thing from. Think about the kind of like RDP on steroids a little bit. And then we also have the compute side of the GPU, which is something that's been evolving for a while. And you know, I just, again, I said GPUs are pretty close to me, but I wanted to take just like a step back to say, why is this important? Where is this relevant, I think, in the market, and how did it get to this point? Like, and so where it started was we had, you know, back in the day, back in the early 90s, we had VGA cards, and then eventually we had daughter cards that could handle this 3D math. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know, Sajid, if you played games back in the early days, you could buy these cards, but you had to go into the software, whatever you were doing, and tell it to use this dedicated, you know, processor that you had in there.
Right.
And really what those things were about was, like, you know, this big math. How can we do these calculations really fast? Because that's what games are really about. It's about, we have a lot of math that we have to do for transforming what's happening in the game to visualization you see in front of you. And so, as that grew up, you know, then we eventually got to the point where we could have what's called a GPU, where we didn't need these two cards. We could just have one that does everything, 2D and 3D. And then that kind of evolved over time, and these things kept getting bigger, just like everything in Moore's Law. But eventually it got to the point where it's like, wait, we can actually use this for something else. Like, we could do calculations on these things, other calculations behind just graphics type calculations. So could we run like a business scenario through this thing? Could we run kind of a big compute scenario on them? And that's where the compute side of this came from. It's called GPGPU, which is general processing for GPUs. And it's kind of specialized. Like, there's different frameworks you can use to do it because the processors are very specific. But they can really handle loads. So when you talk on a scale size, we're used to in machines, you know, when we're working with computers, you know, 10 cores, 20 cores, these kind of things. We know how many, like, these physical cores we have in there to do processing. These are on the magnitude of thousands.
Wow.
Like, these K80s are, I think there's 5,000 GPUs, like 2,000 on each GPU unit. So it's pretty ridiculous and kind of mind-blowing to think about the possibilities there.
Now, I remember just, you know, going back into the Wayback Machine over here, we used to have these things called math core processors, right?
Yeah.
Back
yeah.
in the day, and that would be great to have. It'd make Excel go faster and whatnot. And now you're saying that all that is now coming to this form of this GP. What do you call this? What GP?
GPUs. Yeah, graphics processors.
But you said something else before that. There's another like, it's a general purpose GPU. Is that what you call it?
Yeah, GPGPU is the term they use for that.
Okay.
Yeah.
They got to come with a more catchy name for that, by the way.
I think they just call it compute now, but yeah.
Compute. So what you're saying is that the GPUs had all these vector graphic calculations, et cetera, built into them, correct? More specific for graphics. And now we're able to make that into a generic form. Is that what I'm reading?
Yeah, no, it's kind of like, again, going back, when we first started with 3D cards, they were called what's called fixed function, which means what it says. Basically, the silicon had some things baked into it that allows us to do certain kinds of math in it, right? Kind of like a CPU, right? So we can only do certain kind of math with these things.
Mm-hmm.
at the lowest level. But it became known that, like, you know, that was kind of limiting because basically it was like a big state machine. So the way graphics programming usually worked in the past, we would build up a pipeline and say, okay, so we're going to render this stuff, and we have billions of things that we need to run through this matrix calculation. And what we'll do is we'll put the card in a state that says, hey, we're going to pass data to you, and here's what it's going to look like. It's going to be 20 bits wide, and the first 10 bits are going to be this, second 10 bits are going to be this. And then it knew, based on that, which functions to execute to say, oh, okay, so if he passes the data in like this, I can do these calculations, and voila, we get our output. Now what happened when the GPU revolution came along was it was programmable pipeline. So now not only can we do that, but we could also pass our own functions in there. So then that's where it started to open up that world. It was like, whoa, hang on a second. Now we can, like, pass whatever we want in Terra to do this calculation. That's pretty awesome.
I get it. Okay. So obviously you're going to need some special software to take advantage of these things, right? I don't know. Can we do it in .NET, for example? I'm trying to – or do you have to use the, like, some special frameworks, math frameworks or whatever to do this?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. We've been down the path with this at Microsoft for a while. I remember in 2008, I think it was, we had this thing in Microsoft Research called BSGP, which was Bulk Synchronous Graphics Programming. And that was an early version of trying to kind of abstract away from the hardware. Because AMD and NVIDIA are probably the two biggest ones in the GPU market. There's others. But those guys basically have, you know, the hardware's slightly different. It's proprietary. That's their secret sauce. But, you know, so writing to it would be slightly different, right, to take advantage of all this raw power.
Mm-hmm.
Microsoft was coming along with this framework from Research saying, well, we could, you know, maybe we could abstract that away. So we could write some code and have it run on both of them. And it was a great kind of first foray into that. And that eventually grew up into this thing called C++ AMP. And if you ever heard of AMP, it was out there. It's been out there for a while now.
Yep.
And that's another version of trying to abstract away from there. Now, the ones that people generally use, especially if you're working, we'll talk about NVIDIA, is CUDA. So CUDA is the framework and the tooling around doing compute on these GPUs. And so what CUDA does, there's a framework and there's a lot of tooling around that. There's even plugins for Visual Studio. So you mentioned Visual Studio. This isn't .NET code, so it's a bit lower level than that. The new stuff is starting to get into C++ now, which was kind of the drive of what AMP was, to try to make this C++, because most of these at the hardware level are C. So writing, you know, CUDA code before version 7 was actually you writing C code. They were trying to push it up into C++, so CUDA 7 actually has C++ support. But yeah, so if you're a C++ programmer, it works with Visual Studio, plugs into our toolkit. They have plugins that work right into it, so it works really well with that.
Oh, nice. Very nice. Well, I think this, I'm glad we're getting into that space, because obviously, you know, for scientists and others that need that raw power, I think using the cloud is pretty much a no-brainer, right? You're not going to buy a whole warehouse full of computers just to do a job, so you're probably going to rent it, and what better way to do it than to do it in Azure?
I think it's a huge space for big compute and big data.
Okay, that's good. That's a nice little geek moment there to talk about GPUs. let's see. Shall we move on to something else, Hale? Or do you want to add anything else on the topic?
No, and sorry about that, guys. It's a little in the weeds there, but it's just something I'm kind of passionate about. And I think it's going to be a big thing. I think it's really going to be a game changer.
I believe so, yeah. That definitely sets Azure aside from the other cloud vendors for sure. And I'll take this opportunity to mention about the pricing, right? I mean, obviously these are going to be a little bit on the pricey side because they are specialized virtual machines. But you know, one of the things you mentioned at the AzureCon is this new prepay service that they have now. You can prepay for a year's worth of compute in advance, and you can get some significant discounts. So I thought I'll just mention that in terms of pricing. That's a general thing that's available now all over the world, and also helps brings the cost down, as well as helps companies budget what they're going to spend for compute for the entire year. So you can take advantage of that right away. So, shall we talk about some of the updates in the Azure space that were announced at AzureCon? Let's see, what do we got here? Okay, the first one, well, one of the comments that Scott Guthrie made, which I thought was kind of put the whole thing in perspective for me actually, is that Azure is one of the few cloud providers that focuses not only on SaaS or not only on IaaS, providing infrastructure, but it has both, right? We have a significant SaaS offerings like Office 365, Dynamics, Power BI, Visual Studio Online, but we also have this fabulous IaaS infrastructure offering. Of course, we also have the PaaS offering to go with that, which is an additional bonus. But there's very few cloud vendors that have that, focus completely on both of them to the extent that Azure does. And even on the IaaS side, there's so much now focus on both Windows and Linux. It's not just Windows, right? We have first-class support for both these operating systems. And it really puts in perspective, like, how much Azure has done over the last 4 or 5 years and how far it's come. One of the key things that they've done in the infrastructure space, just to show the innovation out there, is boot diagnostics, right? I think we talked about that briefly, right, Kale,
Yep,
in a
couple.
previous thing. But they had a good demo of that in the AzureCon, and it was very impressive. They started by showing the Linux side, which is kind of an easier thing to show because Linux always had the serial I/O, right, that's built into the kernel. So you can always see the console, and it's easy to redirect the serial I/O and show it to the user right in the Azure portal. But what about Windows, right? Windows doesn't have a good serial I/O story. You know that. We don't really bump stuff out of the serial I/O. I think maybe a debug version of Windows might do it with a special kernel, but the normal version doesn't have that. But they were able to capture the screenshot, take the output from the screen, and put it out and show it to you right in the console, even before you get a chance to log on. So, for example, by default, if you turn on your computer, you're expected to be at that, at the screen which shows the clock and things like that. But if something were wrong, if you were to get a boot screen or something, like one of the operating system files was missing, you'd get the familiar NT loader error screen, things like that. And you can see that right in the portal now. So, this just kind of just takes away some of those barriers to moving your infrastructure to the cloud. That was always something that you could do if you have an on-premises system or data center. You could just walk up and say, oh yeah, it's got this error on the screen, and that's what's preventing us from booting it. And in the cloud, you couldn't do it, but now you can. You can see anything that you could see on premises. You could see that in the cloud now.
That's cool.
And then something that I had talked about with some of my colleagues recently was this new feature in Visual Studio Online for the load testing. Load testing is one of my passions. I've always enjoyed writing applications and systems that could test websites and try to break them. And of course, we all know that Visual Studio has this facility in it to generate load tests, very elaborate load tests at that. But in order to run it, right, at scale, you needed to have a significant amount of infrastructure in place, right? You'd need to have a big pipe, you wanted to have a global presence because you wanted to hit your website from all over the world. And that was always difficult. You'd have to, there are third-party companies that would have services that would do that for you at quite an expense. Now this is available in Azure in such a convenient way, it's unbelievable. Of course, you could just give it an endpoint, a URL, give it some rules, and it'll just generate the load for you. It'll simulate users and things like that. Or if you did have one of these load tests that you had built, elaborate load tests that you had built in Visual Studio in the past, you could simply upload that web test file now to Azure, and it will now run that for you across all its data centers and simulate the number of users, et cetera, that you need. And it keeps doing that over time. You could do it, you could ping it every so many minutes or whatever, and that gives you an accurate picture of how your application is available, like what the availability of your application is throughout the day, and then put that up on a dashboard or something like that. So I thought that was a cool feature.
Yeah, it gets into that whole DevOps theme of you know, how to complete the whole life cycle of the app. It's not just about building the app. It's about how do we continuously monitor it and make sure that it's still performing the way it was when we built it a couple years ago.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. So what caught your eye in AzureCon, Kale?
Yeah, something new, and I don't know if this was announced in AzureCon or right around that time. And I don't know if we've talked about it a lot yet, but there's a preview version of PowerShell now that's been changed, and it's been a long time coming. And I don't know if we talked about this yet, Sajit, about the
is that the one with the ARM switch extensions?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we mentioned it last week, I think, or maybe a week before. But go ahead and refresh our memory on that.
Yeah, so the thing is, you want to be careful with this. So this guy's in preview. So the current version is, I think right now, 9.8.1, if I remember right. And so like, if you go to Web Platform Installer or any of those normal mechanisms for getting the updates for PowerShell, you're going to get that version. And that version still has the old switches that we had. And when I say old switches, it's what we've been used to. But basically, when we're managing what's called the service management side or the RDFE side of Azure, the pre-ARM stuff, we basically are in that by default when we start up a command prompt. And then if we want to do ARM stuff like resource groups or any of this new stuff that we have there, you had to actually run a switch Azure mode command, which would basically like go through this whole routine of unloading commandlets and reloading commandlets. And that's being unified. It's been a long time coming because, as you can imagine, the PowerShell commandlets have grown in size. It's gargantuan now. There's so many of them. And so that's been refactored, and there's a preview version 1 of that coming out. I ran into it, and this is just a little pro tip here, but I was using that with Visual Studio Online. So in Visual Studio Online, we can actually, as part of our build, and to what you were talking about, Sajid, with load testing, we also have builds that we can do up there in Visual Studio Online. Mm-hmm. And when we do builds, we can, you know, a normal MS build for our application, but then we could have PowerShell that runs that actually there's and deploys this to Azure. And it's pretty extensible now in the build definition. So you can tell it PowerShell commands. Like you could say, okay, when you're done, the build's going to be over here in this folder, and then I want you to go deploy it over here, and you could actually script that out.
Wow.
So you just got to be.
It's a complete life cycle right there.
Exactly. So there's some little snafus there. So if you're playing around with the 1.0 stuff, just keep that in mind. But the 9.8.1 is the current production one, but it works really well.
Excellent. And talking about Visual Studio Online again, just to loop back, one thing that totally caught I was caught by surprise when Scott Guthrie mentioned this is he said that there's free unlimited private code repositories for everybody on Visual Studio Online. That's unbelievable.
Using either
Git or TFS. I mean, of course, this is the code repository part of it, you know, where you can check and check out stuff. And that's nice because, you know, nobody should have code on their machines, right? We tend to lose it. It's nice that they're having this feature where you can save it securely, at least, and keep it in a place where you can always get to it.
Yeah, I think a nice thing about that is it kind of complements the open source community. So GitHub is kind of the opposite offering, right? So it's all public. You don't pay for the public, so you can create repositories up there that are public-facing. Creating private ones, you have to pay for, right, because there's some other things they have provision for that.
Right.
And this one's kind of the opposite. Like, it's private by default, and then you can choose to expose it to. But that side's free. So that I think it's kind of cool that it kind of complements it like that.
Correct. I mean, and of course, you know, I mean, they are expecting that once you start using some of the you know, you get advantage. You get exposed to the lifecycle management features in Visual Studio Online. You'll buy into some of the other things, like you mentioned, the build and deploy, the load testing, you know, the release management, etc. And then looping that back into application insights to make a complete application lifecycle. I think those parts are not free, but you know, I think this will allow developers to get to understand how good these tools are, and then they can decide to take it to the next step and buy some of the other features in there.
Yeah, I think it goes along with the cloud theme, right? It's kind of making a small guy look big, right? It's like if I had nothing and I was starting just from scratch with I have an idea and I want to build this thing, well, I'm going to need to store my source somewhere. Instead of having to buy those resources or try to provision them somehow, We could do it here. And same thing with your app. And it's small at start, and then as soon as it gets bigger, then you want to be more mature and put all these other processes in place, and that stuff just kind of rolls right up nice with that.
Absolutely, yeah. And did you see that slide on the numbers and the Azure momentum? There's some huge numbers that Scott Guthrie mentioned. I'll just throw one of them in particular. It's totally mind-blowing. So currently we're doing 1.5 trillion messages per month, okay, being processed by IoT. And the bigger number is 770 trillion storage transactions per day. day, mind you, okay. 770 trillion. I don't even know how big the number is. I cannot fathom it right now. But that's a lot of storage transactions per day.
I think the one that blows me away on that slide, and I've seen this over the years and the number keeps getting bigger, but 90,000 new Azure customer subscriptions a month. I can't get my head around that. I can't even imagine 90,000 people, and then we're doing that per month. It's wild.
That's amazing. Yeah. So there's some good, another key fact was that more than 40% of the revenue for Azure is coming from startups and ISVs, which is right down your alley now, right?
Yeah, that's great. I mean, obviously the partner community is huge, and it's great to see startups are gravitating towards the services we have there.
That's great. Yeah. And of course, there are some big names now that are using Azure. They talked about, I think the guy from Jet.com was on. They're like an Amazon competitor, and they're really using Azure full time. Everything is in Azure right now. So it was cool to see a new startup like that being built in the cloud. The other big announcement I thought that was very, very cool was the Azure Container Service. Did you catch that one?
I didn't see a lot about that one, so you'll have to fill me in.
Yeah, so that is, we've talked about the whole Docker support in the past, right? How Docker containers, we could host them in Azure, but it was essentially done inside of an IaaS container system, right? We spun up a Docker environment, and then you could use that to store all your your Docker containers and your VMs. And now that's available as a service now. You don't have to do anything in IaaS. It's available as a value-added service. You just have to give it your Windows or your Linux Docker VMs, and it would then, it just puts it into the Docker container and makes it available to you. So this kind of, I think this is the best way to manage small microservice style services, which is essentially what Docker and all are after, and not have to spin up a complete Docker environment, right? Because as cool as Docker is, it's not easy to have to spin up a Docker environment by yourself and manage it. And together in this partnership that you're doing with Mesosphere and Docker, they were able to make that available in a service.
I think it's awesome, and we've talked about a couple of these key features. We got to kind of, I don't know, deep dive, but we need to have a full show just on these, because I think, obviously containers are huge in the future. This is definitely the kind of the future of virtualization, and so I think it would be awesome for us to, one of the things I'm voting for, Sajid, is to get someone on and let's talk a little bit more about this container service.
I agree. We should maybe get our old friend Andrew Weiss back on.
He's
also involved in it. He's the one who clued us into this whole Docker thing way back when. So we'll definitely reach out to him and see if we can have him back on. The other thing that I thought was pretty cool was this what they now call Cortana Analytics. Did you hear about this?
Yeah, I have. This looks this is interesting that I don't know if it's, I think it's more of not a rebranding, it's more of some new deep analytics, an entire suite, and this covers, and correct me if I'm wrong, Sajid, this covers the IoT stuff as well, right?
Well, there's a separate IoT suite which is available, but
okay.
So what it is that, and we've talked about how we have all these plethora of services now, right, in Azure, and sometimes it's a little confusing. Some of them are overlapping, and it's a little confusing as to which ones are good for which scenarios. So what they're trying to come up with are these suites, right? So obviously you mentioned the IoT suite, and of course that contains a whole bunch of services like event hubs and whatnot that are very specific to the IoT model, right? It'll help anyone that's interested in IoT. Similar to that, if you're doing a lot of analytics, right? And that's big data, that's machine learning, that's the data lake service, Power BI, HD Insight, etc., SQL Data Warehouse, all those things. It's nice to be ha to have them all under one umbrella, and then they've put it under this umbrella called the Cortana Analytics Suite. So there seems to be more of a theme now, and it's a way of bucketing all these plethora of services that Azure has into groups that make sense. And I think it'll just help people make sense of all these services a little easier.
Yeah, it looks to me like these are going to be the whole suite concept is around not just enabling a feature, but enabling, again, back to the life cycle of like how do you run and manage and secure and, handle that whole infrastructure that goes along with trying to do that thing that you were trying to do, just the analytics piece of it. And so I think this is, that's kind of a common theme here is to kind of give the whole life cycle, give the whole, from A to B, this will handle it for you. So I think that's really cool.
Yeah, I just like the way they're extending the word Cortana now, starting from the game to the digital assistant to analytics. And then the other thing that caught, I don't know if you saw this, is the Azure Security Center, which was very interesting.
I did see this, yeah.
So what do you think about that? I mean, like it seems to bring together all the like the visibility and control of all your service, right? Because I think that's something that customers are obviously worried about. Now, great, I'm in the cloud, but I've got all these services, and I don't know who's accessing what and when, where, why, things like that.
Yeah, I think this is really cool. I think twofold that this nice thing is cool. I think it's really cool because it kind of wraps an umbrella around this kind of stuff, makes it a little bit easier to manage. And obviously, it's going to give you that policy management, the security, the threat detection and alerting mechanisms. But I think beyond that, what's cool is if you did, and if you watch the videos, I've seen them for these, you can actually see, like, if they said, well, something is an anomaly. I detected an anomaly with this suite of tools that I'm looking at through my portal. Actually, back to the partners, they actually plug right into this. So if you have any problem with malware or something like that, it's actually literally right there on the same screen. You can say, I need to like fix this. What can help me with this? And another pane slides out to show you context sensitive people who are partners who are involved in that space. So I think it's pretty cool how I can kind of both do detection and also kind of prescription if you need it. I think it's neat.
Yeah, and I think one of the slides they showed that you just have to tell it to analyze all your services, and it'll go and analyze them, and it'll tell you exactly where the holes are, right?
Yep.
It tells you, okay, you forgot to patch this thing, you forgot to close those ports, etc., etc. It gives you a big list, and it also loops in some of these partners in places where Azure doesn't have built-in support to, like some of the software firewalls and things like that.
Yep.
So definitely something worth looking into. All right, I think we've kind of covered some of the big high-level announcements from AzureCon, right? I'm sure there's more deeper dives that can be done, but and we'll put a link to some of the Channel 9 videos, which I definitely recommend everybody takes a look at some point. But anything that we missed, you think, Cale?
Oh, I'm sure we've missed things, but yeah, we tried to hit a few of them here, and we'll probably catch a couple more in the next episode. But yeah, then after that, I think it's on to kind of drilling into each one of these and giving a little bit deeper dive on them.
Okay. Actually, did you want to talk about that ASM to ARM conversion thing? You found something on GitHub on that?
Oh yeah, so. There was some talk about this, and I think it was mentioned actually on a past. I don't think it was the last podcast, but the one before that about, okay, I have my stuff provisioned up here. Let's talk about VMs or something like VMs that are in version 1, right,
Correct.
of the portal, and then there's V2. And we were asking about, you know, how could, I think you brought it up, Sajid, was, you know, how can we kind of migrate those? Like, if I, I hear about this ARM, I want to use ARM, how do I get there? Do I have to, like, basically start from scratch again or whatever? So there is a tool out there, and this is open source, obviously, so it's just something out there in the public internet that I found that actually does that. So it's for a single VM, so it's not full feature to do everything. But I thought it was kind of cool to see where this is going, and I'm sure this stuff will improve over time to the point that, you know, we can kind of automate this to be able to pull those things over. But, yeah, I just wanted to point that out for anybody that ran into that. Yeah, if you get a single VM out there, you can actually use that tool to do it.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah, that'd be nice. And it's, I think the more and more we're talking about ARM now, we're going to have to do a deep dive or do a show this on that at some point. But in case our listeners want to get into it before then, there's a new virtual academy that's been released by the Azure CAT team. And it's called the Deep Dive into Azure Resource Manager Scenarios and Patterns, and we'll put a link to that. It covers a lot of different reasons for ARM, how to configure it, how to create resources, you know, how you want to organize your ARM files, etc. So we'll put a link to that in the show notes.
And that's free, right? I mean, anybody can just log on, and that's awesome.
The virtual academy is amazing. It's got thousands and thousands of great classes for everybody.
Cool.
All right, Cale, we'll save some of the stuff for Evan when he joins us next week at episode number 100.
Yeah, we'll have to do something special at 100.
All right, until then, see you later.
Thanks, guys.
Take care. Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcasts. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.